the Attorney General, Donald Eyre, who served during the George H.W. Bush years, said, "The idea of prosecutions addressing systematic efforts to overturn legitimate election results are themselves election interference is just ridiculous," adding, "They are the only way that the integrity of our electoral process can be defended." Former justice official and White House lawyer for part of Donald Trump's years, Ty Cobb, said Trump's claims of political persecution and election interference are part and parcel of the same disease, his crippling narcissism. "It's classically hypocritical coming from the unchallengeable king of election interference." Still, Donald Trump and his lawyers have kept up a barrage of election interference claims with an eye to getting trial dates deferred. Trump lawyer Todd Blanche in February invoked election interference in trying to persuade New York judge Juan Merchan, who is overseeing the hush money trial, to postpone it. Todd Blanche argued that since primary season has begun, it is complete election interference for the trial to proceed under 34-count indictment against Donald Trump. Judge Juan Merchan shot back, "That is not a legal argument." In a similar vein, Trump lawyer Steve Sado argued in an Atlanta court filing last year that putting Trump on trial this August, as Georgia prosecutors requested on 13 counts of conspiring to overturn his 2020 loss in Georgia, would be the most effective election interference in the history of the United States. The trial date for the case, which was brought against Donald Trump and 18 co-defendants by Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis, is now in limbo, in part because Fannie Willis has been charged with a potential conflict of interest by one defendant, which now awaits a ruling from a Georgia judge.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Chants echoed through the streets of the Pakistani capital Islamabad as thousands of demonstrators gathered to condemn the United States and Israel.
Ceasefire now!
The protest, organized by Pakistan's largest religio-political party, Jamaat-e-Islami, saw passionate crowds marching through the streets, expressing solidarity with the Palestinian cause and denouncing Israel's actions, which take place with the support of the U.S.
Of course, there should be a ceasefire long ago, but even now we are pressing for it, and you have seen how irresponsible and insensitive Biden has been responding. He was just having ice cream and talking about ceasefire as if it was a very casual affair. And on the other hand, the way children are dying, women are dying from morning till night, and especially there are a lot of prisoners which are taken by Israel. And there are large number of women and children who have been taken as prisoners, and their condition is pathetic.
The acts of solidarity in Pakistan reflect widespread outrage and sympathy for the plight of the Palestinian people.
As a Pakistani citizen, I think that our government should immediately call for a ceasefire and boycott all the products that are supporting the Israeli aggression in Palestine. And I also want to say that the whole world should come out of their houses and protest, because the kids, Palestinian kids, are starving right now, and they are being starved, and they are scared, and they are homeless, and they have nothing to eat and drink, and they are dying. And how can anybody bear that?
The protesting Pakistanis called on the government to cut its ties with the U.S. over what they call the barbaric role in the killing of innocent men, women and children in Gaza.
People here in Pakistan are concerned about the ongoing atrocities committed by Israeli forces in Gaza. They are demanding that the international community enforce an immediate ceasefire by bringing the U.S. and Israel to the International Court of Justice for their war crimes in Gaza. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Syrians have long been accustomed to eagerly welcoming the holy month of Ramadan, brimming with joy and happiness. But this year has brought an unusual sense of sadness as the harsh economic conditions exacerbated by unjustified Western sanctions is casting a shadow over their celebrations. Moreover, their hearts are heavy with sorrow for their brethren in Gaza, who endure the devastating consequences of the ongoing Israeli onslaught.
We are going through a painful situation as people do not have money due to the poor economic conditions. As store owners, we are trying to consider the people's circumstances by reducing prices during Ramadan. However, basic production materials are expensive due to the importing difficulties.
Ramadan is always a special month, as it is a month of worship, patience and blessings, especially in Palestine. However, this year, it is as if Palestinians in Gaza have been fasting for more than 5 months. We pray for them and gain our determination, patience and steadfastness from them, from the brave faces of Gaza's children, the resilience of its resistance fighters, and the patience of its steadfast women.
Ramadan comes this year while the Western world, which claims freedom and humanity, practices double standards with the people of Gaza, who are suffering from hunger, blockade and Israeli crimes. Palestinians are paying the price for demanding their freedom and legitimate rights. Syrians will always stand with them until the final victory over the Zionist regime and the liberation of the occupied lands.
The month of Ramadan comes this year amid the continued unjust Western economic blockade on Syria. We see our people in Gaza suffering from blockade, hunger, killing, destruction, and continuous Zionist aggression without deterrent.
Syrians are a living nation because they have defended resistance, and the Palestinian people are the soul of resistance. We say to the West, you will lose, and the access of resistance from Iran to Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, and Yemen will prevail. We will break the Caesar Act and all your blockades on Syria and Gaza, and we will all pray in Al-Quds.
Syrian message to their brothers and sisters in Gaza is that no matter how difficult our circumstances may be, your tragedy in Gaza remains even more challenging, and your resilience is an inspiration not only for us, but for all free people around the world. Syrians welcome Ramadan this year amid hard economic conditions due to unjust Western sanctions and with heavy hearts for their besieged brothers and sisters in Gaza. Yet their commitment to the resistance fuels their faith in eventual victory. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Yemen is from all walks of life gathered in the capital Sana'a and other major cities and chanted slogans in praise of the Yemeni army's naval operations. They also reaffirmed their full support for the Palestinian people and pledged to continue the protests until the Israeli genocide ceases.
The Yemeni government, all its members, its president and the people have one position, which is to support the Palestinian cause. We must thwart the American, Israeli and British project and stop starvation in Palestine. Our position is an honorable position, and our broad movement indicates that the Yemenis have great awareness, and God willing, victories for the nation will be at hand.
Protesters expressed support for the Yemeni army's naval operations against Western vessels, stating that the Palestinian cause helped the Yemeni people overcome the problems created by the Western powers in the country. They believe the conspiracy targets the whole region, not just Palestine or Yemen, and call on all Muslims to unite to thwart Western projects.
We went out today in Sana'a, as you can see, and in the rest of the governorates to announce to the world that our demonstrations and our position is a religious position that will not change with regimes or rulers. We will continue to insist on our position until our brothers in Gaza are victorious, receive food and medicine, and the U.S.-Israeli genocide against them stops. Our army will also continue its operations until the aggression against our country stops. Our operations are escalating, and upcoming strikes will stun both friends and enemies.
Our demonstration here in Sana'a and other governorates is to send a message that we as Yemenis have been able to overcome all the differences and problems that the enemies sought to create inside Yemen. The other message is that we continue to support the Palestinian cause, and what is happening in Gaza is shameful for all Arabs and Muslims. The operations of our army in the Red Sea and Bab al-Mandab are completely linked to what is happening to the people of Gaza, and the escalation of naval military operations is a legitimate move to support the Palestinian cause.
Recently, the Yemeni army intensified its naval attacks against American, British, and Israeli-linked vessels and regional waterways, resulting in the sinking of a British vessel in the Gulf of Aden. It also attacked an American vessel, which the U.S. claimed led to loss of lives among the ship's crew members.
Yemenis assert that the success of Yemeni naval attacks, despite the presence of Western warships in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden, demonstrates the capability and high-tech weaponry possessed by the Yemeni army. They believe this achievement should inspire other regional forces to join the fight and support the Palestinians in face of the common enemies. Abdul Latif Roshali, Sana'a.
In recent years, Iran and Russia have significantly enhanced their cooperation in a wide range of fields. A key driving force behind the growth of bilateral relations between the two countries is forging a new geoeconomic reality in one of the world's most strategic regions. Both nations have been pursuing several objectives in this regard. They have been after establishing an independent monetary system, energy market, and parallel supply chains outside the control of Western regulatory frameworks to circumvent sanctions imposed in an attempt to isolate them. And their efforts have yielded significant success. In the field of trade, despite facing severe sanctions, Iran has managed to surpass the $2 billion threshold in exports to Russia. Iran's exports to Russia predominantly consist of fruits, polymer products, vehicles, non-metal minerals, and chemical products. Similarly, Russian exports to Iran, valued at the same amount, mainly comprise agricultural products. Iranian officials have hailed the economic cooperation between the two nations as closer than ever.
Analyzing the export trend, we see an acceptable growth in all sectors, with Iran's exports to Russia witnessing a notable increase in both volume and value. This progress not only contributes to the advancement of the two nations, but also lays the foundation for the development of other regional countries.
The total value of annual bilateral trade between the two countries reached $4.9 billion in 2023, according to Iran's official statistics. A Russian economic delegation was in Tehran in late February for the 17th round of their Joint Economic Commission. Both sides then pledged to boost trade tenfold over the coming years. Mahdi Abusyan, Tehran.
On the International Day for Women's Rights, demonstrations and pro-feminism strikes were held around France by women and the men who support their fight for equality. In October 1789, the Women's March on Versailles apprehended King Louis XVI at his luxurious palace and brought him to justice in Paris. But much work remains to be done in Republican France. Only 37% of French Parliament is female. Two-thirds of France's working poor are women. in large part because women compose 80% of France's part-time workers.
A return to far-right economic austerity after the COVID lockdowns hurt women more than any other minority. Women are more likely to work in the government and to use social services, so cuts to government budgets hurt them more than men.
Une femme qui est tuée tous les trois jours en France.
In France, one woman is killed every 3 days by their partner or ex-partner. Our government must take more measures to protect the safety of our women. We also need policies which abolish the male-female pay gap and which better protect women from rape.
Israel's attempted genocide of Gaza has had a disastrous effect on women. From the starvation of 60,000 pregnant women to the forced displacement of 1 million females to the inhuman and degrading treatment of women by Israeli forces, according to the United Nations, to the murder of nearly 10,000 women.
Israel's genocide in Gaza is an issue for all feminists and for all humanists. Anyone who thinks that we are at the wrong march are obviously just Zionist imperialists. And they also obviously do not understand what it means to support women with equality, respect, and justice.
Globally, 60% of poor people are women. They are paid 23% less than a man, even when doing the same work, and they spend 2.5 more hours doing domestic chores than men.
We have made some progress pushing women's rights to the forefront, but we must demand many other advancements. We must also not forget about the rights of girls, many of whom suffer from sexual violence, and who must be better protected and better represented by our government.
In France and much of the West, women suffer from widespread objectification and the commodification of their bodies. France allows the use of naked women in public advertising, which many say undermines its regular claim to be a feminist model which other nations must emulate. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Hours after targeting two American destroyers in the Red Sea and at the same location where the sunken British ship Roby Mar was attacked, the spokesman for the Yemeni army stated that they had successfully targeted the American cargo ship True Confidence in the Gulf of Aden with naval missiles, causing the ship to catch fire.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a targeting operation against the American ship in the Gulf of Aden with a number of suitable naval missiles. The hit was accurate, thanks to God, which led to the fire breaking out on it. The targeting operation came after the ship's crew rejected warning messages from the Yemeni naval forces.
Officials suggest that the U.S. claims of the loss of lives come within the Western narrative and could be a fabrication to justify larger aggression against Sana'a and to garner international support against Yemeni naval operations.
Since 2015, we have been facing the American-backed Saudi aggression, and in all our military operations, we have not targeted any civilians, and this is an honorable history for our armed forces. Regarding the deaths of civilians in the attack on the American ship, this news comes within the American narrative. This news may be fabricated to escalate attacks against Yemeni territory. We are prepared for confrontation in all its forms, and our naval operations will escalate whenever the Western attack escalates, whether against our brothers in Gaza or against Yemeni territory.
U.S. officials reported that three of the ship's crew members were killed while others were critically injured.
Observers state that the Yemeni army's latest operation substantiates that the threats of escalating naval operations were not mere media propaganda. Moreover, they assert that the Yemeni army has already begun deploying unexpected weaponry, catching the U.S. Navy off guard and leading to the failure to protect its vessels. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
War on Gaza continues unabated. Israel is pressing ahead with its systematic move to dehumanize the entire population of the Gaza Strip and destroy all aspects of life in the besieged territory. Piles of rubbish and solid waste are now a normal scene in Gaza's streets after Israeli forces targeted all parts of civil life in Gaza, including the municipalities, where dozens of the crews were killed. Waste storages and all related equipment, including waste collection vehicles, were also destroyed in the war and completely paralyzed.
Israeli forces targeted several vehicles used to remove the rubbish, as you can see over there. This left us paralyzed in handling the tremendous amounts of the rubbish left by the displaced people crammed in the central area. We demand that all international bodies help by providing us with the needed equipment and vehicles.
Not only did the deliberate Israeli attacks against the municipalities cause this crisis, but Israeli prevention of delivery of fuel needed to operate the vehicles and equipment worsened the problem. This caused rubbish and wastes to pile up on the streets and in shelters.
This is a big problem we have been suffering from since the beginning of the war on Gaza. The rubbish is scattered everywhere in the vicinity of the hospital, which causes a lot of diseases for people, particularly the children.
Infectious diseases are ravaging Palestinians in war-torn Gaza as the health system collapsed by the war, and dire conditions and scarcity of food and clean water have set off a public health crisis. The Gaza Health Ministry, alongside many international organizations, has called for an end to the catastrophe that is looming in terms of the infectious diseases that began to spread on a wide scale among the displaced Palestinians. Hundreds of thousands of those people, mostly women and children, were now diagnosed with contagious diseases like hepatitis and intestinal diseases.
More than 150 days of this war led to mass displacement of the people who crammed in the evacuation centers without having a real access to the hygiene and cleanness. This caused a lot of infectious diseases, particularly among the children. Needless to mention the severe shortage of the medical supplies and assistance amid the overwhelming number of injuries inflicted by the Israeli attacks.
Months-long incessant Israeli bombardments have put the vast majority of the health facilities out of service. This, as limited sanitation facilities and overcrowding shelters are causing the spread of disease and keeping Gaza from recovering.
It's another dark side of the deep catastrophe that still afflicts the Palestinian people as a result of the ongoing apocalyptic Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip. While the outcries of the Palestinian civilians are still unanswered and muted by the American veto. Mutab Msabih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. The Limelight.
Shop thefts in England have more than doubled in the past 3 years, costing retailers some £953 million a year. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. UK shop workers are facing 1,300 incidents of violence and abuse a day and a battle to control brazen acts of shoplifting as pressure mounts on ministers to intervene to protect retail employees. According to the British Retail Consortium, the trade body which represents most major shops retailers in Britain, retailers saw the number of incidents of racial abuse, sexual harassment, physical assaults and threats with weapons rise 50% last year, while thefts more than doubled to 16.7 million incidents. The rise in retail crime has coincided with a period of rampant price inflation, with the cost of everyday goods from eggs to baby formula increasing over the past 2 years at a rate not seen since records began in the 1970s, leaving many families struggling to make ends meet. Some experts argue that efforts to cut labor costs by using technology such as self-checkouts have contributed to the problem, while retailers are blaming a rise in organized crime and scarce police resources. Helen Dickinson, the British Retail Consortium's chief executive, called for police to step up the number of arrests. Helen Dickinson said, despite retailers investing huge sums in crime prevention, violence and abuse against retail workers is climbing. Criminals are being given a free pass to steal goods and to abuse and assault retail colleagues. No one should have to go to work fearing for their safety. The number of thefts has quadrupled on a pre-pandemic levels. Violence and abuse, which fell after a spike during the lockdowns of 2020, have jumped back up and are now three times higher than before the pandemic. The latest figures come after almost 90 retail leaders, including the bosses of Tesco, Sainsbury's, Boots and WH Smith, wrote to the government in October, demanding action on rising retail crime, as they said violent criminals were emptying stores. The British newspaper The Financial Times has also covered this story and tells us more. Retailers want the British government to introduce a standalone offence of assaulting, threatening or abusing a retail worker, arguing that this would enable police to understand the scale of the issue and send a message that such crimes are being taken seriously. Under a similar law introduced in Scotland in 2021, retail crimes now carry tougher sentences and require police to record all incidents of retail crime and allow the allocation of more resources. Helen Dickinson, the British Retail Consortium's chief executive, said, "Why should our hard-working colleagues south of the border be offered less protection?" Katie Bourne, the Sussex Police and Crime Commissioner, who is the lead for business crime at the Association of Police and Crime Commissioners, said the levels of retail crime being reported were unprecedented, adding, "Every day retail staff are facing the consequences of shoplifting, brazen behaviour, and that's why I have supported the call for a specific offence of assault on a shop worker." She added, "Our courts need to work more efficiently and shoplifters need to be deterred from re-offending." The Co-op, which has more than 2,000 stores across the United Kingdom, said it was installing 200 secure till kiosks, locked cabinets for expensive goods and artificial intelligence technology to monitor self-checkouts in its supermarkets after a 44% surge in retail crime last year. It has also doubled the amount it spends on security guards. Last year, the fashion and homeware retailer Nexus boss Simon Wolfson also said he had seen a rise in shoplifting, which had hit profit margins at Next. That came after John Lewis said it suffered a £12 million year-on-year increase in theft, with its chair Sharon White calling shoplifting an epidemic. Paul Gerard from the Co-op said the majority of thefts were by people stealing to sell on goods in large volumes and could be accompanied by threats of abuse. Gerard added, "People are being followed home from work. I know of one example where we had to move people for their own safety." He said violent theft happened in city centres and leafy market towns, with professional criminals moving on to other stores if extra security measures were put in place at a favoured target. Co-op stores in some areas were reporting more than two incidents a week, where criminals have jumped over till kiosks to steal cigarettes, lottery cards and cash. However, Paul Gerard said There had been green shoots in the past few months as a result of the government's retail crime action plan published in October, which includes a police commitment to prioritise attending reports of shoplifting involving violence against a shop worker or where security guards have detained an offender. The plan also involves the more controversial Project Pegasus, under which 10 of the country's biggest retailers, including Marks & Spencer, Boots and Primark, are handing CCTV images to police to be run through databases using facial recognition technology in an effort to identify prolific or potentially dangerous individuals. Paul Gerrard said police attendance at incidents at co-op stores had shot up to 60% from 20% in October, which was a real step forward. He said, until October, there was no risk in engaging in that type of activity, and now there is a real risk of being arrested and prosecuted. Recently, a coalition of Britain's largest retail associations, including the British Retail Consortium and the Association of Convenience Stores, sent a letter to every police and crime commissioner in England and Wales, decrying a level of shoplifting that they said was having an enormous financial impact on businesses. They said retailers are facing unprecedented levels of shop theft in their stores, with many now seeing organised looting of their businesses on a regular basis. Yet, the Association of Convenience Stores, which represents more than 30,000 local shops, told the Financial Times that shoplifting in its sector had risen to a level it had never seen before. It argued that the discrepancy between the experience of retailers and official statistics was because of a lack of crimes against business, only 16% by its estimation being reported.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sesti. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. The Holocaust on Palestinians in Gaza continues by the Zionist regime. There will be no ceasefire for the beginning of the month of Ramadan, and there seems to be no pressure on the Zionist regime. The United States and its cohorts have not only given the Zionist entity the green light to continue its genocide, but these countries are complicit. Inflicting as much pain and suffering as possible seems to be the goal of the Zionists and their Western backers. We're going to take a look at what happened today and what has happened for the last 5.5 months on this program. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Harley Schlenker, spokesman, International Schiller Institute out of Germany. And John Phoenix, journalist and international relations expert out of London. Thank you both for being with us. Well, Harley, let me start off with you. Did you expect this genocide to still be going on 5.5 months later?
Well, I think anyone who's listened to Joe Biden can realize that whatever he says about being more humane and stopping the killing of civilians, it means nothing. Because if the United States wanted to stop the killing, they could very quickly. by cutting off the money and cutting off the weapons and cutting off the diplomatic cover. So regardless of the fact that Biden said he wanted a ceasefire by Ramadan, that the U.S. is putting out these messages, Blinken travels there, Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, all of them are saying that this is unacceptable. They know that that's not going to stop Netanyahu. And the problem is that the U.S. is giving, as you said, a green light to the Zionist regime, the Netanyahu regime, to slaughter Palestinians. Now, the other aspect of this is, what about Europe? What about the European allies, the NATO allies of the United States? There have been a few voices raised, but on the whole, the Europeans remain fully in the camp of Netanyahu. Obviously, many of them believe that the solution to the problem in the region is to drive the Palestinians out of Palestine. They won't say it, but that's what they're letting Netanyahu do. And so I'm not surprised that it's continued. I'm horrified that it is. My organization is working to do everything we can to build a movement to stop it. But so far, the Biden regime is totally committed to defending Netanyahu, despite his statements today on MSNBC that he's upset with Netanyahu.
Yeah, stay with me on that. I'm going to get to that a little bit later in the program. Now, John, did you expect that a ceasefire would be in place by the month of Ramadan?
Well, I believe that the issue of ceasefire before Ramadan, this was just lip service by the Biden. I believe that the Ramadan is starting tomorrow. And the Israelis, for several times, refused after meeting with the Qatari mediators and the Egyptian mediators. They refuse any proposal proposed by Hamas, which is a simple proposal, is that the, well, obviously, Israel had to draw from Gaza. A ceasefire, will be at the same time. And then the first week, they will start, going through exchange of prisoners. And then from there, they take it for second phase, which is the Israelis would have to be out of Gaza completely. Now, they rejected that. Okay, they, because they wanted to give the Palestinians a break in Ramadan, so after Ramadan they'll be ready to come back and slaughter them. They are refusing a ceasefire. They wanted a ceasefire only for Ramadan. This is not acceptable for the Palestinians.
Right.
So that's why the proposal of having a ceasefire before Ramadan or for Ramadan is fair.
Right. What about that, Harley? It's actually quite mind-boggling that it is proposed, and we saw it earlier. There is a temporary ceasefire. We have a pause, and then we get back to the genocide. I mean, it is so mind-boggling. It's so dystopian just to think about this being even a possibility that they were bringing this up.
Well, that just shows the hypocrisy. I mean, the idea that you're going to stop firing for a little bit of time to get the hostages back, then you're going to go back in and continue the mass murder. The fact that no one's calling that out shows you the extent to which the West has lost all semblance of morality. Now, I just was at a briefing this afternoon at the South African embassy in Berlin, and what they said is they're going to continue to go to the International Court of Justice with one complaint after another to try and get some motion on this. But you look at what this means, even if the International Court of Justice rules that this is genocide and it should stop, it goes to the United Nations. And the U.S. continues to veto even a ceasefire resolution at the U.N. So when the U.S. says they want a ceasefire, I ask, well, what's the evidence that they really do? There's no evidence that they do. Right. They're comfortable with the destruction of the Palestinian population. And, of course, this goes back to why it is that they supported Netanyahu's efforts to break apart the unity of the Palestinians, why Netanyahu for a period of time was funding Hamas, why the Israelis were so-called caught off guard on October 7th. This is what Israel has intended to do. The ethnic cleansing has not stopped from 1948 to the present.
Okay, well, John, from a military perspective, the Zionist regime really has not been successful in Gaza. Are you surprised at the way the Palestinian resistance has inflicted harm, though, on the Zionist military?
I didn't think so, because this is not the first war, actually. The only difference between this war and previous wars, this is the genocide, where they now they change the tactic of attacking civilians, bombing schools and hospitals. They know if they went, obviously, for a one-to-one fight with Hamas, they will not really be able to succeed. They tried Hamas several times before, and they failed. The only difference now is they are not attacking Hamas per se. They are attacking the civilians and hospitals and the schools. You know, it is really a barbaric war, not a war, a barbaric genocide against the Palestinian civilians. So I'm not surprised that the Palestinians who will fight to the last second, the last drop of blood to defend their own land.
Right, of course. Well, Harley, why is the U.S. playing this game as if it wants to help the Palestinians and get aid to them, but at the same time it doesn't actually stop the genocide and it actually helps with it?
Well, let me give you a slightly broader perspective where this fits, which is that we've just seen motion with the so-called BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, expanding to include a number of nations in the region, including the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Ethiopia, and Iran. Now, the importance of that is that the United States, the military-industrial complex that controls the United States, is trying to destroy the potential for a new financial system. And you see that in terms of the attacks on Russia, the attempt to destroy Russia, and now we see the attempt to create a wider regional war. For what purpose? To maintain the U.S. sole superpower status, with Israel as an enforcer agent of that. My view and our view is that Israel is being used as a tool by the Anglo-American networks to maintain the unipolar order. And so, and from that standpoint, Biden, Blinken, Sullivan, they don't care one bit for the murder of Palestinian children. We saw that with Madeleine Albright, the former Secretary of State, who praised the killing of 500,000 Iraqi children by sanctions, saying that it was worth it to get rid of Saddam Hussein. So this is the bloodthirsty mentality of the clique that controls the government in the United States and the United Kingdom. And that's why they keep vetoing these resolutions, and they cry crocodile tears about the children who are dying as they give more weapons to the Israelis to kill them.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, John, U.S. President Joe Biden on American Network on Saturday said that there is a red line for the Israeli regime in Netanyahu. Later on in the same program, he said there is no red line for the regime. What do you make of this?
I mean, you have to keep in mind one thing, that the players here, the person who controls the whole scene, is not Joe Biden. It's the Zionist lobby in Washington. Obviously, Joe Biden throw this out as election year now, and he tried to distance himself from the genocide by saying, look, we're not going to allow the Israelis attacking Rafah. Well, nearly half of Gaza strip in the city of Rafah. They're still attacking Rafah, on the edges of Rafah. Yesterday, they killed 30 people. What do you mean? It's okay to slaughter other people in Khan Yunis, Bereish camp, 8 refugee camps. They're being slaughtered daily and left to starve to death. Yet he's just worried about Rafah. You know, the issue of the aid, which is, as you mentioned earlier, they are quick enough to bomb the Hodeida in Yemen, Hodeida airport. They can bomb anywhere, but they cannot drop aids to the Palestinians. Most of the aids was dropped by the Jordanians in the sea, where the Palestinians have to go to the sea to fish the aid, and the Zionist Navy there, killing them on the water. So it's really a hypocrisy of the Biden by actually saying, we have a red line. He cannot cross the red line in Rafah, but we don't have a red line because we cannot really abandon Israel. Well, he's sending daily supply of military equipment to Israel to kill Palestinians. So why is Rafah only? Nearly 780,000 Palestinians in Rafah. Why is Rafah only where there's 750,000 in the center of Gaza and in north of Gaza? They left there to starve to death.
Well, Harley, is the Zionist regime and the regime in Washington basically one and the same?
Well, let me take a step back and make a point that I think is important. The American people are starting to turn against this war. They're seeing the footage, the social media coverage, and we saw the results of even the Democratic Party rebelling against Biden in the Super Tuesday primaries. It's not enough, but it indicates that there are people in the United States who don't agree with this policy. And you see internationally, when the South Africans brought this motion to the International Court of Justice, 55 nations, including the Organization of Islamic Countries, the African Union, and others, testified against Israel, against the Zionists, as carrying out a genocide policy. So there's opposition to it, but not inside the U.S. military-industrial complex. They are totally tied in with the same banks and financial institutions that run Israel. And, the question that some people have is the Zionist lobby running the United States. Well, the Zionist lobby is essentially the corporate cartels of banks and defense sector companies and others that want war. They don't care if it's in Ukraine or Israel. They've done their damnedest over the years to try and portray every Palestinian as a terrorist to justify the attack on Palestine. And so most Americans don't know the story of the colonial occupation of Palestine going back beyond 1948 to the whole Balfour Declaration and so on.
Right.
So as a result, the American people let Biden lie and let him get away with it, although, as I said, there is a resistance building to that.
Well, John, since the U.S. and Israeli policy seems to be so intertwined, does it mean that both entities can't be charged with war crimes and genocide?
Well, yes, those who are aiding the genocide under the international law, they should be charged because they are part of the genocide. Yet, physically, they are not obviously involved. But we do also aware that there is some military involvement by the American Marines in the beginning. Those who listen to a lot of the locals in Khan Yunis, he was actually talking to some of the soldiers who did say we are from USA, spoke to them in English. So the United States cannot just, obviously, in the end say we have nothing to do with us. They're aiding the Zionist regime, they're supplying them with their weapons, and also they're supplying them with all footages, which is telling them where is the movement of Hamas, if there is any movement. They have their own satellite there. So they are actually practically part of that genocide. But the problem is, whatever happened in the International Court or United Nations, there is no mechanism to force Israel or to punish Israel. They are above the law. And when any as your guest said earlier, any time any resolution goes to the United States, it doesn't matter how many countries will vote for it, one vote, one veto, which is the United States, So that's what they, three times so far, they vetoed a ceasefire.
Right.
Just to stop the killing. It's not even involving the Israelis withdrawn from Gaza and go back to the 7th of October, obviously. They wanted actually to keep the slaughter by actually being an obstacle by stopping the slaughter of the civilians.
Well, Harley, do you think the U.S.'s proposed setup of a port off of Gaza is a ruse, as many analysts are saying, to basically empty Gaza of Palestinians and to take control of the Strip and its natural resources?
Well, I think that's a cruel hoax. The idea that you're going to put a pier out into the ocean and deliver some food. You know, the U.S. made a big deal out of dropping 38,000 meals ready to eat. 38,000 for 1.5 million starving people? You know, I think if it weren't so deadly, it would be, people would be laughing at this. But I want to go back to this question of the complicity of the United States, because the Genocide Convention of 1947-48 said that supplying weapons and support to a nation committing genocide means the nation supplying the aid and the money and the weapons is also complicit. And so under international law, if there really was a rules-based order, which Blinken keeps talking about, the United States should be brought on charges of genocide along with Israel. And the fact that it hasn't been shows the extent to which nations are afraid to turn against the unipolar order. Because the U.S., look, there's the 7th Fleet, or the whatever the 6th Fleet is in the Mediterranean. The U.S. has proven its willingness to conduct killing in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Libya, in Syria, with the support of the terrorists there. So, you know, I think the problem is there's got to be a reaction in the United States and Europe. And it's important what you're doing to get the story out, because your news does get covered in the United States. They try to silence it, but the more the truth gets out, the more chance we have that we can turn this around.
Yeah, they definitely try to silence this network many times. Go ahead, John, you want to say something?
Don't forget, in the beginning of the genocide, the USA sent their military ship bordering the Lebanese shores and sent, obviously, threatening messages through the Lebanese government to Hezbollah not to involve. Not only the supplying weapons, they vetoing any resolution to condemn the Zionist entity in the United Nations. They physically, actually, and they are actually on the sea, telling Hezbollah, if you involve, we have to involve to protect Israel. So, as the gentleman just mentioned, aiding and financing is part of that. But as I said earlier, there is no mechanism to force United States or Israel. In 1979, the American bombed the harbor in Nicaragua. And international law obviously decided that the American under Reagan should rebuild the harbor. So we've been waiting 45 years now. Nothing happened. You need to have enforcement to make things happen, not only spending time condemning this and condemning that and nothing happened. Palestinians after South African complained to the court, they still been killed. That war never stopped. Hospitals still being bombed. Schools still being bombed. So there is no mechanism to stop that unless the Palestinians and the other neighboring resistance intensify their resistance to the Zionist entity, and then that will make a big difference. A little move by Yemen, you know, a little